Hey guys, welcome back on Top of Roofing with Cody and Eric. It's your mild mannered host, Cody Durham. Mi amigo over there. What's your name again?
Eric Whitfield. Eric, hey everybody. By everybody, I mean Mom and Hope. How are you guys doing?
Me, pretty much just me. So it's been a minute since we've been with everybody, but wanted to come back. It is storm season, and we are almost a day late and a dollar short to do this particular episode today. So I think we have a tendency to maybe overlook this because it's just become second nature for us. But today we're going to talk about preparing customers for storm season. You know, from our standpoint, towards the homeowners and anybody in the industry, maybe to hear how we go about it. But this year, more so than ever, I think with insurance changing the way it has, it's really, really important to have a clear understanding of how to go through the process, maybe the flow after storms are ready to hit, or after storms have hit for that matter. But last night we dodged a bullet. Doesn't sound like any bad storms blew through. Haven't heard of anybody with any significant damage other than some roof leaks because of high winds and things like that. But anyway, so that said, we're going to jump right into that and you know, when you're going to file a claim, why you file a claim, if you should file a claim. But the first thing I think that anybody needs to really have a clear understanding of is your insurance policy.
Yep.
And there's a number of policies out there, and we answer this question maybe more than insurance agents or some insurance agents at times, is what is the difference in an ACV policy and an RCV policy? Eric, I'll throw it to you. Tell me what ACV is in your eyes.
So ACV stands for actual cash value. And the way insurance sees things, they all have their own different ways of doing it, but it's usually based on age. And there's kind of a sliding scale based on when a roof hits a certain age. They normally during the RCV, which is the recoverable replacement cost value, it's a full replacement. You get everything. There's going to be a two-part payment system. You get a chunk of it up first, which is called the ACV. Then you get the back end of it, which is the recoverable depreciation. That ACV is just what the roof is worth. There's no recoverable depreciation. So you have it really limits how much insurance owes on that roof, again, based on age, and then minus your deductible. Sometimes you can be left with very little if you don't know the age of your roof or how your policy actually is written, and those kind of factors. They become very challenging at times.
Yeah, I kind of think like when you purchase a car, your car is the most expensive it will ever be when you drive it off, or when it's sitting on the lot. Right? The moment you drive it off the lot, it begins to depreciate and the value goes down. So with an ACV policy, it's very, very similar. You write that policy, it's a brand new roof. Roof's in great shape. If you were to get hit by a storm that day, you're essentially going to have the full amount
value
for that roof, the full value for it. However, every year that roof gets older, essentially you've driven that roof off the lot, it's going to go down in value and it's going to depreciate at whatever percentage that is. And instead of, you know, let's say it gets hit 5 years from now, well, prices go up, you know, on a roofing standpoint, labor standpoint, anything like that. But the value of your roof essentially goes down with regards to what the insurance company is going to pay you. So there's a big delta there, right? So understanding that is paramount prior to filing a claim, because we've run into it where somebody has an actual cash value policy and maybe they have a really large deductible. We'll talk about what a deductible really is here shortly, but let's say, you know, your roof's 12 years old, you have a 2% deductible, the roof's worth, I don't know, $20,000. Well, you've got a $8,000 deductible and then the depreciation took away, you know, the $12,000 that the roof was worth. So you file a claim, they total your roof and they say, yeah, thank you for filing a claim. We do note that your roof is totaled. However, we're writing you a check for nothing because there's no money on that.
Right.
So understanding that prior to filing a claim is really, really important.
Simple call to your agent to just say, what is my coverage? What age do you have my roof at? Just simple questions like that. And a conversation with your agent is definitely worth it this time of year.
Yeah. And then, so on the opposite side of that, which we see more often than not, is RCV, like Eric said, the replacement cost value policy. And that is the value of your roof is what they're going to pay you at any point in time with that policy, minus a few caveats. So if they come out, they determine your roof is worth $20,000, they're going to give you $20,000 when everything is said and done. Now, that said, the disconnect there for some people is they're not going to give you all that $20,000 up front. They are still going to depreciate your roof based upon the age of it. But when the work has been completed and a certificate of completion or a final invoice has been sent to the carrier, at that point, they're going to release what's called the recoverable depreciation. And you're going to get that, and then you pay your contractor at that time. So that's really confusing for homeowners, because they'll see, oh man, it said, you know, I've got a $20,000 claim, but they sent me a check for $4,000. Well, they depreciated it and they took out your deductible for that first payment. So you get that, you pay your contractor when he begins the work, work's completed, they send in that invoice, then they're going to send that remainder to you.
Yeah, a lot of people miss that bottom piece, that last recoverable depreciation piece is coming in. It really confuses a lot of people when they get that check from insurance. They think they're just getting a $4,000 or $5,000 check, whatever the number is, and they don't understand that second piece of it. So it's important to know that.
Yeah, so understand that going into it, and make sure you have a contractor who understands that too and what is needed to make sure you get that recoverable depreciation back. We can talk a little bit about that when choosing a contractor and how all that needs to be taken care of properly. So we'll get to that here shortly, but yeah, call them. And there's one other piece of that to be aware of. With various carriers now, they're doing something, and it's probably called a multitude of things, but essentially it's called the roof payment schedule. And what you see there is you have an RCV policy, again, replacement cost value policy, where they're, you know, covering the entirety of the roof. However, once you hit whatever that threshold may be, 8 years, 10 years, 12 years, 15 years, it will then essentially turn into an actual cash value policy and it will begin to depreciate. So understanding what that threshold is for you has a big, you know, I guess a big bearing on your claim when that happens too. So Eric mentioned, you know, understand or make that phone call to find out how old they have your roof listed as, because that can have a big, big drastic difference on how much money you're going to get on your claim. So again, if you have to file a claim, you have to file a claim, but having a clear understanding going into it instead of getting caught with your pants down, so to speak, when it's done and then being really upset because there's not enough money there, you know, in your eyes from the insurance company to cover the totality of the roof. Yeah, it's scary for a lot of people. And, you know, we hate to be the ones to have to explain that to you, that, you know, it's just, unfortunately, you're going to have to come out of pocket more than you might have if the policy were a little bit different, the roof were a little bit newer. So, you know, education is why we're here today. And, you know, your insurance agents, that's what they're there for too, as long as you have a good agent who's there in your corner that you can call and talk to. So that's very, very important. Those are the two main things you want to look for.
Real quick, there also is some non-recoverable depreciation, and that is right. Another line item that tends to come up. You usually see it, or some examples that you might see it on is like fencing.
Yeah.
Sometimes on the collateral items, if they're going to, you know, pay to power wash and restain your fence because you've got some hail damage on it, they put a depreciation on that fence as well. And a lot of times, a certain percentage of that is non-recoverable. And I just had an example a couple weeks ago where we did a roof on a house and did all the, she wanted everything done that was in the claim, which is great because it maximizes the claim for her. We did gutters and fence staining and all that. But when we kind of went through the numbers, she was like, well, that's not exactly, you know, what the numbers are adding up that you're telling me to look at these line items that insurance is paying for. And I said, well, that's because if you look down here, you know, you've got a non-recoverable depreciation item of $268 or whatever it was. So there was a little bit of a delta there that she wasn't getting that back, and she didn't really understand why she wasn't getting it back. So having these conversations to fully understand, you know, what you're owed, what insurance owes you, and kind of helps you set the expectation of knowing what you might have to come out of pocket is pretty important this time of year.
Yeah, absolutely. And the final, I mean, there's lots of things to understand with your insurance policy, but with regard to claims, the final piece that I think confuses people a lot of times is the deductible. And Eric, I'll let you start off. Like, what's a good analogy for a deductible?
Your copay at your doctor's office. You don't get to the window after surgery or an appointment of any kind and say, hey, you know what? Let's talk about this. Let's see if we can negotiate. And what if I just give you $200 on my $400?
Yeah, what if I put a magnet on my car that yeah. represents your doctor's office?
Yeah. How can I whittle this down a little bit? Your copay is your copay. And back in 2019, you know, the laws were changed. And it's a shock to a lot of folks that haven't had to deal with it since 2019. forever in Texas. It was a way to, lots of roofers were kind of waving, eating, moving money around to cover those deductibles. And that's just the way it was done. So for a lot of folks, that's the history that they know, and it's changed. And so you have to pay your deductible. It's a law. We obviously want to earn your business the right way. But we're not willing to risk all the issues and the law, breaking the laws that are out there, the fraudulent laws that are out there. So, it's just like your deductible or your copay at your doctor's office. You got to pay it. And now the laws are different. You have to pay your deductible now.
Yeah. And I think one of the other confusing things about it when it comes to a claim in your deductible is how is that money accounted for, right? So you see when you file the claim, the deductible is already been removed from the claim packet, the total summary. So you never see that money. But when it comes to payment of the deductible, the insurance company's not paying it. You have to pay it directly to the contractor. It doesn't go to the insurance company. It doesn't go anywhere else. It goes directly to the contractor. So that's the confusing piece for a lot of people, because they see it's already been removed. And it's just the numbers are tricky. And so, again, having a good contractor who understands this process, and, you know, most should. If they don't, that's troubling. That's certainly a red flag if somebody does not know how to read the insurance paperwork. But the deductible, and those numbers are big. A lot of carriers are moving to 2% deductibles. We're hearing 3 and up, even
fives. Yeah.
And so if you think about what it's going to cost to replace, you know, your home in the event of a catastrophe, you know, if they're saying it's worth $500,000, well, that's a $5,000 deductible on a 1%. So at 2%, you can do the math, 10,000 and up and up and up. And, you know, a lot of homes, the roof in and of itself is, it may be $10,000. So if you have a big 2% deductible, we go back to what we were talking about a little while ago. You file that claim, they say, yeah, it's total, but you have a $10,000 deductible. Your roof is worth, you know, $11,000. Here's a check for $1,000. That's hard for people. I don't keep a lot of money sitting around under my bed to replace my roof.
To a roofer.
Right. Yeah. Mike, he does. He's the rainy day guy.
I have a question.
Oh, please, Mike.
I'm the mystery person showing up here. So talking to homeowners, I'm a mortgage maker. So talking to homeowners on a regular basis, I think that most people think that their deductible is a percentage of the cost of the roof, not a percentage of the cost of the value of the policy. And that's where, because like, oh, if the roof's 10 grand, my deductible is $1,000 if it's 1%. And it's like, no, your home value is 400,000 or your replacement cost or whatever. Yeah. And your deductible is a percentage of the entire value of the home.
That's 100% right. And
thanks for bringing that up.
Yeah. Cause I think because in the past, the way the laws were so lax with regard to deductible, you've always had a deductible on a claim, but you never really had to know about it because they were getting covered. But now, yeah, having a clear understanding of what you just said is really, really important. So, you know, I think most people get excited when they see the value of their home go up for resale value and things like that.
All that equity.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But in turn, well, one, your property taxes are going up too. And then in the event of a claim, that deductible is going up. So,
So what happens to a roofer if they try to do it the old way? What are the penalties these days, and how do they get caught?
That's a big question. Obviously, you know, we haven't really run into it on our side.
Right. So, well, yeah, you guys do things the right way.
Exactly. Right. But my understanding of it is you can go to jail. There are significant fines.
It's a jailable offense.
Yeah. So the way that they get caught, my understanding is it has to be reported by someone else. I don't believe Texas Department of Insurance has any sort of governing body or police force, essentially, at this point, that's looking into it.
There's no FBI of roofers?
No,
that I'm aware of.
I wish there was.
Yeah, they're pretty stealthy if they are.
Yeah. But, you know, there's been a big push. You know, we are members of NTRCA, and they've done a big push to help educate homeowners and other contractors to prevent this from happening. And there are some links and places you can go if you want to report something that's going on that shouldn't be going on. Haven't heard of anybody getting caught yet. And maybe they have, and we just don't run in those circles, fortunately.
Right.
But it's something to be careful of. You know, I'm not willing to sacrifice my livelihood over your roof. And I understand everybody wants to save a buck, and there's, you know, financing options and things like that you can do, but it's just, you know, the law is the law. And
yeah, there's some
fraud of all the words too. fraud is like the nastiest sounding word. And it just, it scares me. It's like nothing you ever want to be associated with and tell your kids you've been accused of.
Right.
So,
yeah, I think there's some pretty hefty fines too. So it's not only jailable offense, but it is, it's fines, and it's for both the contractor and the homeowner.
And I would think generally speaking, if a roofer is willing to do that and risk that, then their other practices of their business are probably not that great.
Yeah. What other corners are they cutting?
You got a question.
Yeah. And then the homeowner, the way they get caught is they basically do a poor job like they probably would. And then the homeowner's like, you know, you screwed me over. And so now I'm going to report you.
Right.
You know what I mean?
Well, and I think the other piece of it is when people start shopping, you know, multiple roofing companies.
Yeah.
And they start sharing those bids, like, well, wait a minute. And we'll talk about this too, sharing your insurance paperwork. But why is his bid so much less than yours? And the other contractor who loses the business and was privy to this going on, he's the one who's going to do that.
Yeah, yeah.
It's typically going to be another contractor, I think.
Yeah. So if you're a roofer listening to it, it's not worth it. Yeah. It's not worth it.
Not, man.
Yeah. Especially because if you have to put stuff in writing and they're passing out your bids to everybody, that's not a good way to
do it. Well, and that's the other thing about the contracts that homeowners sign. I mean, the law specifically states the verbiage that has to be in there with regard to deductible laws. It has to be in there and, you know, certain font and all that sort of stuff. So if it's not there, that's a problem too. But again, with the rising costs of everything and the expense of roofing, you know, labor's certainly not going down. Our roofing materials are sure as heck not going down. We've found out the other day.
Yeah, taking another price increase.
Yeah, so it goes up. So they're going to have to cut some corners somewhere.
Yeah,
it may be a small corner, maybe a big corner. But it's just something to be aware of. And us and our company as a practice, we choose to do it the right way. So we can sleep well at night. And sure, I guarantee you we've lost jobs because of it, probably pretty recently. was it yesterday? It seemed recently.
Yeah, it was yesterday.
Oh, it was. Yeah. Okay. Yeah. Maybe not even 24 hours ago.
Man, that's a wound. That's a wound right there.
Okay. Like you know what? It's okay because I slept perfect last night. So it's we did the right thing. And you know, some guys can sleep the way they sleep by not doing the right thing. And that's fine with them.
Well, and if you're working for a company that's doing that kind of stuff, that's not exactly really great job security either. You know what I mean?
Right.
Because it's just a matter of time these days before that stuff gets figured out. You might get away with it once or twice or three times, but eventually it's going to bite you.
Well, and if it's a large company that's doing it as a practice, then
I mean,
it's that I would think will close doors.
And be careful. They might even throw you under the bus as the guy out there putting the offer in saying that they never approved it. And company.
And you're an independent subcontractor.
Yeah. Yeah. So
who's that going to fall on?
The liability's on you.
That's right.
Absolutely.
That's
right. That's true.
So, So deductibles scary, but just to wrap all that up with a bow, understand your insurance policy now. I mean, like storms could have hit last night. Storms are certainly coming. We are right at the beginning of storm season. So it's coming. Have that clear understanding. So spend a lot of time on that. But then the other piece of it that we'll move into is let's assume you do have to file a claim, or maybe you think you need to file a claim because a storm's hit. What's next? What do you do? What's the proper process to follow? So Eric, I'll let you jump in and where we go from there understanding.
Yeah. If you feel like you heard hail last night, or there's people knocking your doors in your neighborhood, or your neighbor said, "Hey, I just got my roof paid for from insurance," whatever the case is that leads you to believe that you need to file a claim, please, please get an inspection first. Yeah. There's lots of changes with insurance. And the last thing you want to do is file what they call a zero pay claim. Essentially that you've got it on your record that you opened up a claim, but there is no storm related damage or you know, damage covered by insurance on your roof. You don't want that. So call somebody reputable, get a referral, however you go about your actions to get a contractor that you trust and get an inspection. And if the result of that inspection is yes, there is storm created damage, you've got collateral, you've got ABC, maybe they can show you some pictures on their phone of what's going on. Then it's time to file a claim, but don't just pick up the phone, call the claims department or your agent and say, file a claim for me. It hailed at my house last night and I need to file a claim.
Yeah.
You might find yourself in some trouble there.
Yeah. And the other piece of that too is, and just because your roof might be leaking or you heard hail or, you know, you see contractors start driving down the street, or maybe you have a missing shingle. I think actually the missing shingle thing, I think more people have probably filed claims because they see a missing shingle or two on their roof because they can see it, right? Visually, like, oh, wow, I have a problem with my roof. I need to file a claim. But on a couple of missing shingles, if that's all it is, you know, we're talking about a few hundred dollars that that insurance covers. But again, you talk about having a $5,000 deductible. They don't pay you anything for that. It's below your deductible. So the only time you're getting paid from your insurance carrier is when the money that's essentially owed exceeds your deductible. So two shingles isn't going to get it done. So just because you see it, don't file a claim. You still need to have an inspection from a trusted contractor. Let them get on the roof. You know, you want to see it. And honestly, in Texas, what we see, you pretty much have to have hail damage, significant hail damage to get your roof totaled. Wind, you can still get a totaled roof from wind, but just a couple of shingles here or there is not going to get it done. You have to have significant wind damage for that roof to be totaled. So even if you see it, even if you think it happened, have it inspected no matter what, because the insurance carriers are very tight with what they're willing to pay and when they're willing to pay. And so you need to have a contractor who understands what the insurance carriers look for. They need to be able to see it on every slope of the home, which is also very important because there's also a partial claim. Eric talked about a zero pay claim. There's a partial claim too. So let's just say, you know, we saw this in Mansfield last year. I'm sure lots of contractors did. Storm blew in, 80 mile an hour winds, I think it was, and it was blowing hail, essentially horizontal to the ground. So if your roof was facing, you know, directly into that storm, you'd have one slope that was just blasted with hail, and then you'd go try to find hail on the other three slopes. Well, okay, yes, you do technically have hail damage, but let's say it's a small portion of the house that's on, it could still be below your deductible or just above, and then you have to get that taken care of. And if you don't get that taken care of, what happens is you file a claim 2 years later when you do actually have, you know, a total
more hail,
roof,
more damage. Yeah.
The insurance company is going to say, oh yeah, well, we looked back at your previous claims history and yeah, you opened a claim and we paid you $4,000, quote unquote, but you had a $5,000 deductible. You have to spend that $4,000 according to them. If you don't, this new claim, they're going to deduct that.
Yeah, it carries over.
So not only are they going to pull your deductible out again, they're going to pull that $4,000 out that you were supposed to spend 2 years
previous
ago.
Previous payment. Yeah.
So you just got to always get an inspection. I don't care how big the hail is. I don't care what's happened. Just get an inspection. And we all know as soon as that storm hits and people are aware of it, there are going to be 1,000 people that knock on your door. Some of them good, some of them bad. Guaranteed, just law of averages. So if you choose to go that direction, do your homework, do your research, go out, look at Better Business Bureau, go online, Yelp. How many reviews do they have? How long have they been in business? You know, just what kind of history do they have before you allow somebody to get on your roof? Because we've talked about it ad nauseum. We see it all the time where we have to follow behind some guys who knocked on a door and said, oh my gosh, you have so much hail damage. You should have filed a claim a long time ago. And then insurance ends up coming out and they say, there's no damage up here. So we'll go in behind them. We get on the roof and say, actually, your insurance company's right. There's no damage up here. And you know, it certainly doesn't behoove us to lie and say there's no damage because, you know, we want the opportunity to replace that roof. But, you know, with certain door knockers, it's just a numbers game. File a claim. And if it sticks, it sticks. If it doesn't, they move on and you have to clean up.
Yep.
And why that's so much more important now, I believe we talked about when we had Brad Bingham on not too long ago, with the way that the insurance companies are tightening up and writing new policies. If you have, you know, a certain number of claims on your file, on your file, they may not be able to write that policy for you. And we've said it too, that in years past, Mother Nature wouldn't affect that, but now it does.
Right.
So you don't want to go filing a claim unless you know you have that damage and you're getting that information from someone you trust or someone that you know very well has used them and referred them directly to you.
Right. I got a question for you guys.
Yeah.
I'm back again. When y'all deal with roof claims, who is the homeowner that you typically talk to? And what I mean by that is, husband or wife?
Man, it's probably a pretty
it's
good
probably
mix.
50-50.
Yeah, it's probably
really.
Is it? Yeah, is a good mix.
Even in the beginning?
Yeah, a lot of times. Because, you know, I mean, with us, the homeowners don't have to be there.
Right.
Right. I mean, you can look at the roof. Unless there's a leak and we need to get into the home. So a lot of times, yeah, we're just getting up on the roof and we call and talk to them like that. So it's not always, hey, I want you to meet with my wife and then call me later type thing or vice versa. So, yeah, it is a pretty good mix.
Yeah, I'd say it's a pretty good mix.
Well, the only reason I ask is because you were talking about earlier about sources to find, you know, good people to refer to. I mean, my wife, who does most everything around the house when it comes to finding people to take care of things, you know, we live in Mansfield, Texas, and she goes to Mansfield Moms, you know, Facebook group. And right. if you need a plumber, electrician, a roofer, a whatever, that's where they're going. That's where they're going to go look.
And within 10 seconds, there's 75 names.
Yep.
It's
yep.
hard to cipher through all
that. It is, but I guarantee you, if you screwed anybody over,
they're going to let you know.
They're going to let you know real fast. You're yeah. not going to be on. Somebody will recommend you like, no, don't use yeah. that person. They did yeah. this. And so it's, you know, if you're a roofer and you're working for a company and you want to mind some business and I mean, you know, having a presence there and trying to make sure that all the moms in that particular yeah. part of the city, you know, championing your cause is a good thing. And if you're a consumer and you want to find a place, you know, Yelp's great, but, you know, some of those things can be, you know, managed a little bit. Same thing yeah. with Google reviews. Yeah. Well, Google, they don't really let you do it, but
it can be manipulated.
Right? Yeah. But yeah. Facebook for sure, you know, with those
good
groups.
News, good news travels fast. Bad news travels faster.
That's right.
Yeah,
yep.
That's right.
Yeah. And with regard to that, to the, so us as a practice, you know, speaking of that good news and bad news traveling fast, we've chosen not to door knock for that very reason. So if we screw up and we don't take care of our customers, we don't work.
Right.
You know, door knockers, because they're seeing so many volume, people, yeah, nobody knows their name.
It's a numbers game.
And, yep. and as a homeowner too, you're going to have pretty thick skin, because these guys are aggressive, man. They make a living doing what they do because they're good at it. And they're going to press on you. And you may get to the point where you say, oh yeah, fine, just get up on my roof. You just want to be careful of that, man. I don't like anybody on my house that I don't know and trust, because who knows what they're going to do up there. And, you know, we've run into that too, where damage presents on a roof, and you can tell very easily that is not hail damage.
It's manufactured.
So, yeah. And the last thing you want is an adjuster coming out and accusing you of, you know, having a contractor on your roof, or somebody went up there and put damage that's not real damage. So just be careful of that. And then the other piece of that is a contingency agreement. So your door knockers, most, if not all of them do this. They're going to have you, after they look at your roof and say, oh my gosh, you've got so much damage, we need to get you helped, sign this agreement for me, and we're going to handle everything from here for you. We do that a little different. But in their language too, it's a binding agreement, and they're going to go out and fight the insurance company to get all this and that. And it says, if you know, you don't go with us, they're going to assess some large fine. You know, we could certainly talk about another episode, whether that holds water or not with the legal team, but I'll let Eric explain kind of how we do it and when we do that and why we have to do that at times.
Right. So we, like Cody said, we don't door knock. So a lot of our, or all of our business comes from referrals, whether it's our referral partners that we've, you know, got with insurance companies and previous customers, things like that. We go out there, and if we say, you know, or we determine that there's enough storm damage to warrant filing the claim, we go that route. We don't really have to have a contingency agreement on the first leg of it. Insurance has changed a lot over the last several years, where the adjusters, like Cody said, they're tightening things up. You know, they may or may not see it the same way you see it. So there's several cycles beyond the initial inspection. Just because an insurance adjuster or an inspector in certain cases with carriers come down and tell you, well, didn't see any damage up there, sorry about that, does not mean that you don't have damage up there. And our practice is, if we're telling you to file a claim, it's because we know there's damage and we know we can win or get you a full replacement. We just know there's several steps in that. So after that first inspection for us, if the answer is no, or it's surprisingly the damage that they're agreeing to pay is less than your deductible, but we know that it's worth a full replacement, we would have a contingency agreement in place, and we can walk you through, you know, the verbiage on it. It's not very large or in detailed. It's kind of just very simple. There are steps that we have to go through. There are some costs that we have to incur. There are some resources that we have to devote to. And so in order to go through that next step, which may turn into two or three more steps down the road, we have to have at least a commitment from you that if we do this, if we incur these costs, if we go down this road for you, we go to battle for you, when we get this one, because we know we will, then you're going to award the business to us for, you know, for the claim and the replacement of the roof and all that. So that's how we operate. A lot of, like Cody said, a lot of guys do it on the very front end. As soon as you open the door, sign this, this is our contract. I'm going to have your work. We're not that way, but we do know if we have to go that extra mile, then we do put a contingency agreement in place.
And we have a very clear conversation about that too, because right. again, our company is built on trust like so many others out there. We don't feel the need to have that signed on the front end because we want to build a relationship with you of trust. So me coming in and saying, you know, give me your money before you've really had any time to meet us, understand our company and how we do things, or even have the time to research us. I don't want to lock you into an agreement that you may regret later on. And that's, you know, I'm sure there's other roofers. If they hear this, they're just going to be shouting from the rooftops like, oh man, you're going to get screwed over, whatever. That's just not how we choose to operate. But to Eric's point, when we get further into the road and we have a good relationship and you want us to fight for you, yeah, there's a lot of time, energy, and money that goes into that. And we at least have to be able to recoup our costs. You know, we, you know, 99% of the time when we do have to go those second steps, third steps, we win because, you know, we're very honest in what we see and we're not going to fight for something that's not there. So that's the only time we do that. And, you know, I don't necessarily fault other guys for how they do business. This is just how we choose right. to do business. And one of the main reasons I think we chose to do it this way, we've had so many homeowners call us like, hey, I signed this contingency agreement months ago. The guy won't call me back. I'm getting a bad feeling, but I feel like I'm locked in. I was like, I don't want to ever be put in that position. Whereas if, you know, somebody feels that it's not a good fit, then hey, we part ways and that's okay.
Right.
It just doesn't always work and we're not going to win 100% of the jobs, but if we're going to take those next steps, we have to win that job. Otherwise we're not profitable and, you know, we're not a nonprofit. So we have to make money to keep the doors on open. And so that's how we do that. So don't be frightened by a contingency agreement as a homeowner, as long as you clearly understand it. And again, I would personally recommend not signing anything until you've had time to really do your homework. Do not do it right after somebody gets off your roof until you have that warm, fuzzy feeling that this guy's on the up and up. And so I think that leads a little bit to now into just kind of navigating that process. So you understand your insurance policy, you know when to file a claim, you know when to let somebody on your roof, and you know when or when not to do a contingency agreement. So at this point, it's essentially been determined that you need to file a claim. And 9 times out of 10, the way the claim is going to get filed is you're going to either call your agent or call a 1-800 number, or you can go online and do it now. I personally don't think you should allow your contractor to do it for you. I've just, again, we hear horror stories of that. Other contractors trying to get the insurance company to have their name put on the check. And again, I just think that leads to mistrust. So you call, file, they're going to ask you for a storm date. You're obviously going to know the storm date because you'll have that conversation with your contractor, or you will know because holes have been punched in your ceiling. So you do that. And at that point, what they are going to do is say, okay, great. We're going to call you with a date when they're going to come out, and it's going to be a 3-hour window. At that point, you really need to call your contractor, let him know that date and window of time also, because you want your contractor there.
Someone there on your behalf.
Probably another conversation at times is why that's important and maybe less important today than it was. But you still want your contractor there to witness what's going on. And then typically 24 hours before that, they're going to call you again and say, hey, he's actually going to be there at this time. You don't want to be waiting for 3 hours. Your contractor certainly doesn't want to be waiting for 3 hours. So they narrow that time down where everybody can be on the same page and get there at the same time. So then they send the adjuster out. The adjuster is going to climb on the roof as well as walk the entire property, because, you know, hail doesn't just hit only the roof.
Yeah.
It's going to hit your barbecue grill. It's going to hit your fence or
gutters,
anything and everything on the property that's been impacted by the storm. They're going to look at, they should look at, and then document that damage and pay you for what's been damaged. And then from that point, I'll let you take over from here, Eric. What should take place after that adjuster's been out?
So as a contractor, you want to just set the expectations when you're going through this process and you've actually gotten to through the assessment with your homeowner, and the direction is going to be a file a claim. What we do is we kind of set the expectations, and not to be doom and gloom, but we do sometimes kind of
set them low.
We kind of give the range, like you're going to be, here's what's likely going to happen, and here's what will be great if it went, you know, swimmingly in the right way. But here's what we tell folks is, like, The goal is to have them come out, see exactly what we saw, walk the property, find all the collateral and do everything, kind of write you up the estimate and agree with the storm damage that we've seen. It correlates with the storm date that they have on file. And they're going to replace it. They're going to give you an estimate and they're going to start the cutting of the check process. Most times it doesn't. A lot of carriers are sending out inspectors and those inspectors do not have the authority to say, not even say if it was hail damage or not. They use a code word anomalies. We saw some anomalies on your roof, but the desk adjuster will be in touch with you. They'll take a bunch of photos and they come down off the roof and that's all they can really say to you. They can't talk about your policy or coverages or anything. And they tell you somebody will be in touch with you and they always say 2 to 3 days and it's typically a week before you hear back from anybody. So, again, just setting these expectations so your homeowner knows what, you know, kind of what to expect. But, there are, and that's typically what happens. Now, if you get lucky and you have a carrier that actually deploys a licensed adjuster who can on the spot make that call for you, be great to be able to agree with the contractor and say, yep, there is storm damage. Here's what we're going to do for you. Here's how we're going to take care of you. And then they'll go through their process of the two payment process, recoverable depreciation, all that things we talked about earlier today. But just because that inspector slash adjuster gets down and says, there's no damage up there. You as a homeowner need to know that there are other steps and other things that can take place. And that's where we come in and say, okay, well, there's a way we can do these things. And I don't know if we want to go into that now, or if you want to elaborate.
Yeah, a little bit. I mean, I think when we say set the expectations low, it's in preparation of those steps you're talking about, right?
Yeah.
Just because the adjuster or the insurance carrier says, hey, no, we don't see the damage or it's less damage than what you believe is there. That's not the end of it. Right. And that's the importance of having a good contractor on your side who understands what's there.
And having them, like Cody said, having them on site. We as a practice aren't there to argue with anybody. We do feel it's important to be an advocate or there's somebody on behalf of the homeowner, whether you're there or not. We're not there to argue with anybody or tell somebody, look at this, circle this, this is hail. It's just another set of eyes, as Cody said, to witness kind of what they're seeing. We get a feel for, they didn't chalk anything
and
up.
We will point stuff out, you know, and we can certainly have conversations, but you know, there's a lot of horror stories out there about arguments and stealing ladders,
leaving people on a roof,
stuff like that. And that's not what we're going to do.
No.
But yeah, you want them there to see that. You can take photos of what they've documented and that way, you know, you just have all the facts that you need to move forward. Right. And again, moving into what you can do in those cases, you have rights as a policyholder for a second look inspection, however many inspections you need with the insurance company. But you have those rights to do that. You can always go to appraisal. You can hire a public adjuster. So just if you truly believe and you trust what you're being told with regard to your roof, just know you can keep on going. It is going to take a little bit of mental fortitude to do it because it does become a time very time consuming. You know, most of the times where we've had to go to appraisal with, you know, a couple of carriers to be named later, it could take upwards of a year.
Yeah.
So, you know, just be aware, just be willing to fight the fight. You know, you pay your premiums for a reason. And if you have damage, you need them to cover it. You certainly don't want those dollars you're putting into your insurance every month to not be able to be used. But that said, you don't want to file claims for no reason. Right. So trust your contractor on that. And then kind of the final piece that we want to get into, I know this is probably mind-numbing conversation for a lot of people, but this is good education. The final, probably most contentious thing that we have to deal with and because of the way things were done in the past is, let's assume your roof has been totaled. What do you do with the insurance adjuster's summary? Should you or should you not give it to your contractor? Mike Mills, what do you say?
Should I give my adjuster's summary to my contractor?
Which states what they are putting or basically paying for on your roof.
No, absolutely not.
You're wrong.
You're wrong.
Oh, damn it.
You could not be any more wrong.
Damn it. I don't want to tell them this, the number, right? I want to give them the number.
But that's the problem,
right?
And that's
I guess the insurance is paying for it, though, right?
The insurance is paying for it.
So whatever the number is, the number is. The
number exactly.
But okay.
I changed my mind. Can I change my mind?
Right. No, you can't. Sorry, you're out, sir. Yep. No roof for you. The issue with that is because the laws that we were talking about earlier are we as contractors have to work directly off of what insurance is paying, because it's your, you have to pay for your deductible. That's the law, right? So we have to know essentially what they're paying you to work directly off of that. And why that's important, you know, we get back into those fraud laws and things like that. If you say, well, I'm not giving you my insurance paperwork, just give me your best deal.
Give me a bid.
Okay. So, okay. I mean, we can always do a cash deal and we're not going to be involved with insurance, but I'm certainly not going to send the insurance company an invoice that states I did it anything for something I did not do it for. And if they get an invoice for anything that's less than what the insurance company has said, they're not going to send you whatever money that they have sitting out there in recoverable depreciation.
You're not getting the overage.
No,
no.
They are not paying you to get a roof on your house.
Right.
Yeah.
Right.
You don't get to make money off your insurance claims. And man, to be honest, it was done in the past. People would make fat stacks of cash off of insurance claims. And that's been the expectation. So holding on to your insurance paperwork, it doesn't benefit you in any way. I mean, don't get me wrong. It certainly could if you work with a contractor who's willing to do things fraudulently. So it's in your best interest, one, because the insurance company owes that money, and you want to make sure you get every dollar that the insurance company owes you. Absolutely. So the only thing you should ever be out of pocket, unless you decide to upgrade or anything like that, is your deductible. So it really does you no favors. And most companies too, we use the same program that the insurance carriers do. So we can pretty much figure out what the numbers are anyway. Because we have all the measurements of your roof, we know what they're covering. It all pays the same rate, so we can essentially figure it out. But it just doesn't benefit you in any way, shape, or form to hold on to that paperwork. Yep. Now, on the opposite side, let's assume there's not a claim, or maybe you don't have the coverage you need. You know, you have an ACV policy, and your roof essentially kind of tapped out with regard to money 20 years ago or after 20 years. So you're not getting anything from the insurance company at that point. At that point, we can do you a cash deal, right? So we just work up an estimate, best deal we can get you. And if we can win your business, we do. But you put insurance involvement in it, we got to do it on the up and up.
Yeah, we have to review the paperwork. And there's another reason too. I mean, sometimes, you know, insurance uses a lot of software. They're not out there usually tape measuring every single thing in the house or on the house and on the property. So sometimes their measurements are wrong. Sometimes they have a miscount on the ventilation or the boots or plumbing boots, whatever. And so being able to look at that in the entirety of that claim, again, on your behalf, to say, hang on a second, there's three boots missing, there's XYZ missing, they didn't get the full linear feet of your gutters, they're not paying for it, we got to go back and supplement. And that's another step that we take as a contractor, to go back and, again, maximize that claim. Because if you're going to open the claim and there's storm damage and they're going to total your roof, you want to maximize the claim on every dollar that they're offering to cover your property, because their job is to restore that property before the storm damage occurred. And you want the property restored before after the storm damage. So being able to look at that, it's a number of reasons that we need to be able to look at that paperwork. It's not just where you don't get the opportunity, or you shouldn't have the opportunity to just bid out, you know, to various contractors when you have insurance companies. You're going to hurt yourself in the long run with that depreciation we talked about earlier.
Yeah. Yeah. And that's, again, you go back to the contingency agreement. At that point, it's fine, whoever your contractor is, to have a contingency agreement in place, because they're obviously having to do some work and send some documentation and go back and forth with the insurance company to make sure you're covered. So there's a number of things that come after that, but that kind of sums up the process of preparedness for storms and what's to come if and when you should have to file a claim. You know, the whole roofing process, that's a whole nother episode for another day, but this is it. It's just education. Educate yourself on your policy, educate yourself on your contractor, understand the meeting that's going to take place on your property, and understand what can take place after it. You have those things in the bag, and you'll have a comfortable claim, a pseudo comfortable, depending upon how it goes.
Could be, yeah.
But you know, just having that education, I just think makes things much more palatable for people. So, you know, that said, we're always here to help and educate in any way we can. We're a phone call away for questions on this topic matter. And anyway, we're always grateful for the time to share what we know and learn with other contractors and homeowners. And, you know, you'll be seeing us again very soon. We're going to have an exciting guest later on this month. So, yeah, I know. Do you like that little teaser?
Ooh, yeah.
Makes you wonder what I'm talking about.
A real TV guy. Ooh.
You like that? I know, I'm learning as we get into this, right? So anyway, we're looking forward to that and looking forward to doing this again. And As always, thanks so much from me and my compadre over there.
Thanks, everybody.
See you soon.